Everybody, welcome to the Don Bad Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. So what you're going to hear today is actually part two of our interview with Sterling Gibbs. If you listen to our podcast on Friday, where we talked about Dan Hurley's hiring, Sterling joined us for the last 10 minutes or so. New Jersey native, he knew Danny Hurley for a while and talked about what kind of coach he is, what kind of guy he is, and the type of connections he has for East Coast basketball. But we actually had a much longer conversation with Sterling that involved a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to play for you now. So on this podcast, it's going to be myself, Peter Bard, Megan Bard, Kevin Meacham, and Alex Cohen. And we're going to talk to former UConn guard, Sterling Gibbs. Hope you enjoy.
Gibbs, what's up?
What's up?
Sterling, where are you?
I'm in Hungary right now. So I started in Russia. I came home, and then I came back to Hungary to finish out the season.
When's the year end for you?
About mid-May or so.
That's not too far.
Yeah, no, it's not bad.
How you liking it over there?
It's cool. I was here with LaSan.
Yeah.
Last year. So me and LaSan played on the same team last year. So now this year, you know, I have one other American on my team, but it's not the same.
Who is it? Cool.
It's this kid, Chris Dunn. Not the Chris Dunn problem.
Oh, shit.
Not him, but this other kid, Chris Dunn, I think he went, like, Division II and then just worked his way up, like, overseas.
Good for him, man. So, what time is it where you
were? Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning.
Cool. So, normal interview
request.
I had
watched the Elite, the Sweet 16 games.
Yeah.
Oh, those are some good games.
Yeah. Because two of the kids that I know were playing against each other, Hollis Cook and Marquise Towns, they're both from New Jersey.
Speaking of New Jersey, Sterling, we need to get your opinion on the Jersey guy. So they hired Dan Hurley.
Dan Hurley.
You said you've known him for years.
Yeah. So I've known him since about fifth, sixth grade. I used to actually go to the St. Benedict's camp literally every year with my brother. And
which brother?
With Ashton. Okay. And I think, like, you know, we kind of hit it off a little bit, especially at that time. Because he, you know, like, I guess at that time I hate losing now, but I hated losing so much. Like, even in the camp, you know, like, if I lose a game, like, it would be to the point that, like, you know, he might have to give me, like, a little prize. You know what I mean? You know? But he was always, like, a player's coach. And when I was in eighth grade, like, I was really thinking about going to Benedict's. I actually, you know, because he recruited me to go to Benedict's. And I was really, really considering it. But I ended up going to see All Prep. And I know him and my brother actually, you know, kept in contact throughout the years. And when I would see him here and there. You know, I would say, what's up? Whatever. But he's honestly perfect for UConn. Like, especially, like, with everything that, you know, I guess with the program not winning as much as they, as you know, we should. Mm-hmm. I think with his fire coming in, like, he's, you know, he's fiery, but at the same time he can relate to the players. I think it's perfect, especially for guys like Alex Reed, Christian, Jalen, if, you know, depending on what Jalen does.
Yep.
Whoever else comes in.
And it seems like, this is what's funny, wanted to ask you about, that he already seems to know all these guys just from, like, rolling around in East Coast basketball circles.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the perfect part. I think, like, me and my brother Ashton, we were talking about, you know, whether, because Ashton went to Pitt, whether or not, like, he would take.
Oh, congratulations, man. You won.
Yeah, I know. Even though, you know, UConn didn't have a good season, Pitt's terrible.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a fact.
Pitt is garbage.
Yep.
But yeah, we were talking like, yeah, you know, like which one would, like, do you think he would, like, I guess, do? And it kind of, I guess it made more sense for UConn, especially because, you know, Rhode Island isn't far.
It's right next door.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So for him, you know, it wouldn't be a big move. Wouldn't be that, you know, he doesn't have to move a whole lot. Like, he doesn't have to move too far. But at the same time, you know, again, he's recruited big time guys. Like, EC Matthews is a big time guy. Yeah. Like, he has a lot of good kids, and he knows that area. So, and, you know, New Jersey isn't far from UConn, New York, so on and so forth.
Yeah, no, we're pretty excited about that part of it. It certainly seems like he's got a good beat on, you know, how to get the most talent he can out of the Northeast, which obviously is what we're looking for.
He's well respected.
I hear he's kind of a lunatic.
In a fun way.
Like, yeah, like, I was just reading something where, like, he's cleaned it up in recent years, but, like, used to just get, like, insane when a ref missed a call, and then after the game would, like, sit in the film room, cut tape of finding the missed calls and then mail it back to the ref.
I remember watching him flip out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it flipped out.
That's another level.
You know, I've never played for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can't comment on that, but you know,
I didn't know if word had spread through, like, the entire East Coast at that point. And me down.
You know, that doesn't surprise me at all.
It makes me excited. We had a lunatic coach on the sidelines for a long time, and we walked out of it with 4 rings. So,
yeah, that worked pretty well the last time it happened.
Yeah, let's go back to that.
I'm mad at it.
While we have you here, and again, we didn't really plan this, so I didn't prepare anything, but you and I talked about...
we wouldn't have anyway.
Yeah, we wouldn't have. Just sort of what's going on now with the national effort to get college players paid. You had a great IG post where you sitting there drinking a nice glass of red wine, being like,
yeah,
exactly. They're paying the kids now, huh? Like, talking about how hard it was for you to get by in college.
Man, the thing is, I think, you know, a lot of people, like, I guess a lot of college players, you know, get a lot of, like, negative feedback when they say that, you know, you should get paid, so on and so forth. But... like, if you think about it, like, you know, as a college basketball player, because I've played college basketball, I can't really speak on college football. Of course, you know, I see what college football brings in.
You were at Texas?
Yeah, exactly. My first year, you know, like, I was at Texas. But, like, college basketball and college football bring in so much money. And, like, you know, they use the player's likeness. They use so much to bring in the money that, you know, that is kind of like, it's I can't even say kind of unfair. It's completely unfair for them not to at least, you know, give something. Like, a college player, you know, is so gets busy and not even allowed to have a job.
Right.
To the point that, like, you know, like, they now have, I think when I was at UConn, it was like $700 or so for the semester. And
just,
you know, $700
for, like, groceries and stuff.
Like, when you first get it, it's like, okay, you know, I have $700, and then
quickly you don't.
Yeah, exactly. You go to Muya a couple times. You know, like, I wanted to take my girlfriend out to eat instead of getting a lemonade, we got to both get waters. Yeah. And then, of course, that $700 goes by fast. Just on things that, you know, like, you just kind of, like, you just want to be a regular student. Right. And a regular student gets that opportunity. It just really doesn't make any sense the way that college basketball, college football, and even some of the other programs as far as, like, you know, I guess that are high, that bring in. Even, I guess, I know at Texas, you know, volleyball brought in a lot of money. Yeah. Because they had a big volleyball program. Like, you know, these teams are bringing in so much money that, you know, I think that they should be at least a little compensated for as much money as they bring into the university and to the NCAA.
So let me ask you this, because I spent a lot of time, maybe when you were there, but before that especially, where I would talk to Shabazz a lot. And Shabazz, mm-hmm, and I would have a lot of conversations. He was the one who first said to me, the NCAA wants me to go to sleep starving. And being like, I work here all day. I leave here. I can't go anywhere. And I don't have food. I don't have money for food. Like, how am I supposed to eat? I just go to bed and I get up and I come to practice in the morning. And that eventually turned into like a giant story, right? But it was always a conversation with them, like, how does that change from the inside? How do players change that collectively when you already are doing so much, when you're already doing like 60 hours a week of basketball and 40 hours a week of school? Like, it just feels like if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen because the players came together and changed it.
Exactly.
I just don't know what that looks like and how feasible that is just with all of the other responsibilities put on these kids.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I think, like, of course, the players, they have somewhat of the upper hand just because of the fact that...
You're not on the court. No one else is putting on the jersey.
Players, yeah, exactly. Yeah, without any players, there's no game. And without any game, there's no money. So it's kind of like, you know, it's tough. You know, it's easy for me to say, like, with like, me being out of the NCAA. But I saw, I think Jay Williams tweeted something about, like, you know, like in order to like change, say, the NCAA and, you know, end up having NCAA pay players what they should or what they believe that they should, I guess it'll take players, say, boycotting games or boycotting the NCAA tournament to let the NCAA know that, you know, it's for real. I think what Shabazz did, it started something. And of course, you know, the NCAA was able to say, like, oh, okay, you know, let's shut them up by giving them $600, $700 for a semester. That's nothing to them, I guess.
Let me ask you this,
though. Billionaire company. Yeah, that's like throwing $5 away. Like that kind of shut everyone up. But now it's kind of like it's becoming more of a thing, especially with, I guess, coaches and everything that's going on as far as like players that have gotten paid,
right,
like under the table or so. Like, yeah. You know, I think now it's coming to a forefront.
You've been in positions. You've been on tournament teams. Have you ever been in a locker room where the guys were talking, like saying, this is fucked up, this is bullshit, we're not getting treated fairly, let's not play today?
I think, to be completely honest, I think it takes a big player.
Yeah.
Because it's more like, you know, as much as the players talk about, like, oh, yeah, you know, this is messed up, so on and so forth, you're still playing to, say, get paid eventually.
Right.
So if you don't end up playing, then it's kind of like, at that point, it's really only hurting yourself. So, like, you know, if everyone, like, of course, is gonna, you know, I guess you're gonna have to risk something, you're gonna have to put something on the line. But at the end of the day, you know, it might not happen for you. Say if you're a junior, a sophomore, junior, you know, senior, might not happen for you. You might not be the one getting paid and like in your time in college. But at the same time, you know, eventually, like, it may happen, but that just takes a big player or so going out on a limb, because, you know, it's going to affect people's money because they're not going to be seen as much.
Right.
And there's going to be backlash. Certainly the first guy to refuse to play, there's the response to that is going to be ugly.
Oh, for sure. You already know that. That's it. Like, you know, I guess it's a completely different thing, but say, for instance, Colin Kaepernick did.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It would be very similar.
Exactly.
The way people feel about it and the language that they use.
Exactly. Colin Kaepernick, he went out on a limb. And, you know, people were like, oh, yeah, you know, he's crazy, so on and so forth. And then people started to, oh, okay, you know what? He did it. I agree. So I'm going to do it. So and then it just took that one person. And, of course, you know, he's lost a lot of money for it.
Yeah, he got burned. Mm-hmm. He stepped out there, and they taught him a lesson, didn't they?
Exactly. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I guess for what he's standing for, it's not changing as much. But at the same time, you know, it's being heard.
Yes.
So the only other thing I had to talk to you about, Sterling, is do you feel any responsibility for being part of the grad transfer epidemic that ruined college basketball? I've read that somewhere.
No, I'm not taking any of that responsibility.
How much does that piss you off?
You know, I, to be completely honest, I didn't even know that there was a rule. My mom was the one who told me that there was a rule. You see, like, she runs this it's a group, actually. Mm-hmm. It's called Mothers of Athletes. And you have NBA mothers, college mothers, so on and so forth.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's really cool.
That sounds like a group of people who gets things done.
Yeah, right. Oh, it really does.
Get it done. They get it done. So, you know, like my junior year, I was like, you know, it was a lot going on, so on and so forth. What I seen on. And somebody was like in the group, they have, you know, she puts together these meetings. And somebody in the group was like, oh, you know that if you wanted to, you could transfer, you could graduate and transfer. And me, I'm like, oh, really? Graduate and transfer? Oh, that sounds good, except for the, you know, school part. So, you know, like, that was the only time, that was the first time that I even heard about it. And now it seems like it's just, like, that's, like, the thing to do. But I don't mind it, you know. I think it worked out for myself.
We liked it. We were fans.
We were just talking earlier about how we you know, we really enjoyed your time at UConn, and we wish it was for 4 years, you know?
Yeah. Me too. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed it a whole lot. It was a family atmosphere, especially at Gamble. I really liked it, especially with the students.
What?
It's a fun place to watch a basketball game. I imagine it must be a really cool place to actually play a basketball game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, well, you know, it's a cool place to play if you're a winner.
Right. True.
When you're losing and it's like, it's quiet and you have all those fans there. It's,
So, Sterling, it's a little
My question, what do you prefer, Gamble or Hartford?
Oh, 100% Gamble.
Of course.
No one ever says Hartford. Oh,
I'm ready to cancel this conversation. Better not say Hartford.
If he said Hartford, we're going to take his visa. He can't come back.
No. I love Gamble. Because, you know, it feels more college. Like, Hartford, you know, it feels...
It's cold.
Like, yeah, cold, big. It's a trial. I'm not saying I liked Hartford, but, you know, it's just...
Not as much.
Not... Yeah, exactly. That Hartford's for the adults.
Well, especially like at Gamble, the students are right there. They're like in your face when you're playing, and which just, you're right, it's such a much more like college atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the students, if you go on a run, you want to feel that energy. I think, you know, Hartford, of course, you know, I like it, but it's so spaced out to where, like, you know. Yeah. I just hit a big shot. Okay, that's nice.
So let me ask you this, Sterling. Well, so you played in the Big 12 for a year, and then you were in the Big East. You grew up in the East Coast. I mean, what are your memories of Big East basketball when, you know, it was Pitt, UConn, Syracuse, St. John's?
I have so many memories because of my brother Ashton. I went to all his games, so you know I was actually there for Syracuse UConn.
Six overtimes,
because they have played the game before.
Oh,
and
right.
We stayed, talked to Ashton for a little bit. And then you take the train home, whatever, and you got to drive home, whatever. And the train from, you know, from North Penn Station to New York Penn Station is like 15 minutes, but then you got to drive home. And we left, it was after halftime. So half, the game had already, it might have been like 10 minutes left in the second half. So we were like, okay, yeah, you know, the game is probably going to be over. We wonder who won. We get home, And of course, you know, I'm in high school. I still have school the next day. The game is literally just getting started. So, you know, I stay up and watch that game. And then I think the biggest one that I literally can't shake, because I follow Kimba's brother on Twitter.
Keto?
Yeah. And, you know, anytime it pops up, you know, he retweets it and whatever. But, like, I remember it was the Big East tournament. Pitt was, like, I'm pretty sure they were favored to win the Big East tournament.
I think they were ranked number 3 at the time.
Yeah. They were ranked high. And I had gym class. And I skipped gym class. And I was like, you know, I'm not even going.
This is my gym class.
Yeah.
The world is my gym class.
You know, I'm not going. So I went to my guidance counselor's office. He had a big TV, and I'm watching a game on TV. And you know, game comes down to wire. Kimba's having a tough game. Like he's not playing as well. You know, my brother, he's hitting everything. I'm like, okay, you know, we're gonna pull this one out. Comes down to the wire. Kimba has the ball. I could rerun the play literally in my head. Kimba has the ball. Brad Wanamaker's guarding him. Gary McGee switches off. And then, you know, after that, I could have sworn, I was like, you know, he's like, when the shot went up, I was like, all right, he's going to miss it. Going to overtime, and then they'll be able to beat it. But
Gary plays over there somewhere, doesn't he?
He's in Greece.
Man, it must be really difficult to play without ankles.
No. I have to say,
Gary was my brother's. He was my brother's like apartment mate.
Yeah,
like, you know, they shared an apartment. His roommate.
I gotta say, Stanley,
kill him every time that gets retweeted.
Oh my goodness.
That was the saddest rendition to this story I've ever heard. We tell it a much different way.
Very different way.
My mom is always like the one that's like, how's your teammates doing? She asks like, oh, how's Gary doing? He's like, yeah, Gary hasn't come out the house in a couple days. Oh. He goes straight to practice. That's it.
Oh.
Now I feel kind of bad.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, he's over it now.
Yeah, you know, you signed that. That's what you signed up for.
So Sterling,
and hey, you were on the team with Jalen who hitting that Cincy shot in the AAC tournament. So that one worked its way back around. That must have been like a wild moment to be on the, because I was watching that game and it was like, oh, they're this is over, and then all of a sudden Jalen hits this wild shot.
Was it really fun to watch Mick Cronin react to that in person?
To be completely honest, I didn't even see Mick Cronin. Like,
he's very small.
You know, like.
Like, what's that experience like, being on the court? That shot goes in. Are you just, like, losing your mind, basically?
To be completely honest, you know, I think everyone didn't expect it. Everyone was pretty much like, okay, he's going to throw this up. Game's over. As soon as Kevin, whatever his name is, that's how Ed made the shot, made that three. We're like, okay, you know, game's over. Now, Coach Miller, he put his clipboard down. We, like, after the game, we reran the we put on the replay. He put his clipboard down. He didn't even see it. He didn't even see it go in. Like, you know, I'm walking away like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. And next thing you know, like, I reacted pretty much off the crowd. Once the crowd reacted, I was like, oh shit.
My favorite.
I went in. I just started running. I think you know most like the crazy, the biggest part for me, and it sounds crazy. Like I never said this, but you know, like Seton Hall. I was watching. Like I have followed Seton Hall that whole year. I still follow them, of course. And they had gone to the championship. They had gone to the, you know, Big East championship. And I'm like, okay, you know, like we're still in a position to get to the AAC championship, so I don't look like a, you know, I don't look crazy. I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, I transferred and then
right.
I hear what you're saying. They win and then, you know, right. I just come up with nothing and it's like, okay. So then, like, you know, Jalen hit the shot, you know, I'm going crazy. We win the game, get back to our hotel, see Hall wins the Big East. I literally, as soon as, like, you know, my girlfriend and my mom, they were there, they were in Florida with us. I was like, you know, I gotta go for a second. I went over to Jalen's room. I was like, thank you.
That's a tremendous story. That's great.
Oh my God.
The underrated part at this, as soon as the Cincy three goes in, the ball is literally on the court and Daniel Hamilton
turns to Jalen
and is just staring at him, pointing at the ball, going, throw the fucking ball in. And Jalen's like, no.
That shows you kind of like who Jalen is.
Like, I know I will hit this shot.
Exactly. Yeah, I know I'm gonna make a full court shot. Okay.
Crazy.
You know, like that in Florida, was it the Magic Arena? I don't know the name of it. Yeah. Exactly. Name of
Amway
or Orlando, something. Yeah.
Yeah, like that arena is so big that, you know, it's like it can't really fill up as much. You know, I guess maybe college basketball isn't as big in that part of Florida or whatever. So, you know, it's not a whole lot of people there. It's a good amount of people, but not a whole lot of people. But I thought it was like a packed house, so as like loud as the crowd was, like when he made that shot. It was ridiculous.
That was a pretty wild day. For us, I mean, we weren't even there.
Oh, really?
We're just at work, like yelling at our computers.
I flipped my desk over. I literally flipped my desk over. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think that was I came to say thank. That was definitely the wildest moment of my UConn career.
I'm watching the replay right now. Is that the fastest you've ever sprinted to get to Jalen?
100%.
You jetted down there.
Mm-hmm. I had to. I was thankful. Like, you know, Jalen, you know, he took it. Like, he was a freshman. So, like, that was, like, mm-hmm. That was huge. And he, you know, I remember that because that tournament, he played so well. Like, I remember KO telling them, like, KO came into the film room and was, like, pointing everyone out. Like, you know, the AAC didn't choose, the coaches didn't choose you for this award. The coaches didn't choose you for this award. And Jalen, they didn't choose you for even freshman team. All freshman team. And I think at that point he had kind of like a chip on his shoulder. And, you know, I can't say that he made that shot because he had a chip on his shoulder. But at the same time, you know, I think that kind of like changed his whole mindset as far as that tournament go. And he played like he was like a junior or senior in college when he was a freshman.
Even in all the overtime periods in that same game, he and Daniel, they both just went nuts that entire overtime.
Daniel finished with like 39 at the end, 38, 39.
Yeah, his numbers in that tournament were insane.
At that point.
He was like near triple-double.
Exactly. Yeah. Like each big game, Maryland, he played really well. You know, Bahamas, he played well. He played really well in Bahamas. And then the whole tournament.
Yeah, played well in the
I'm still salty about the draw you guys got in that tournament. I was like, Kansas in the second round, like, I was still salty about that.
I wish we played this year's Kansas. We would have played this year's Kansas team. I'm not saying this year's Kansas team is terrible, but, you know, they're not as good as that Kansas team was.
That Kansas team was really, really good.
Really good. Really good. Wayne Selden, Perry Ellis, Devontae Graham, Frank Mason, you know. That's just a tough draw.
Yeah.
I also sort of felt like, from being around the team, so I was covering the team a lot that season, like, you guys came out of the gate kind of slow. But by, like, February, you guys were fucking killing it, like, a lot of the time. And we talk about that team a lot now as, like, people don't appreciate it as much as they should because, you know, Sean was there. Sean's probably the best power forward that UConn's had in a generation. And, like, He just came exactly. and went so quietly that I feel like people don't give him enough respect. But if there was one more month in that season, I think you guys would have made a lot,
well, 100%, more noise. 100%. I think it took, you know, with grad transfers, it looks great on paper. It's like, all right, you know, yeah. okay, you know, Serum's coming off a good season. Daniel's coming off a good season. Ronnie's coming off a good season. Sean's coming off a big season. Jalen's going to come in and so on and so forth. But then you got to also put in the pieces like where everyone has to realize that, okay, you know, I have to give up this. I have to give up that. I have to figure out how this guy plays. We have to play a whole different way. We have to go into Sean more. It's not going to be a really guard-oriented team. We're going to play off Sean. So I think, like, once we were able to figure that out, we were pretty good. But I think if we had another year, that team could have been really special. Even though it's crazy because we finished with, like, what, 25, 26 wins?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which yeah. I think is kind of, you know, it's, I'm not going to say it's the best in the world, but it's still really, you know, it's really good. It's underappreciated. So
UConn's been in the league 5 years, and your team's the only one that ever won the conference tournament.
Exactly.
Sterling, tell me just quickly how you were saying you were at Seton Hall and someone kind of broached the subject like, well, you know, you can do a grad year. Once you learned it, walk me through the process of how you went from eligible to arriving at UConn.
Going into college, the school part I didn't really like.
Yep. School. Yes.
Same.
I remember that as well.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. So, you know, it was just like, all right, like if I have to do any extra schoolwork, no, I'd just rather just stay. But then, like, you know, because I had transferred from Texas. Like, all right, that was going to be my, you know, my junior year at Seton Hall was really my fourth year in college. So I had all the credits and everything, and I had done well in my classes. I'd done well in school. You know, most of my credits, if not all, kind of, like, transferred over. So it was like, okay, you know what? If I add one more class, you know, it doesn't even have to be a hard class. It could be public speaking. And then
I got a D in public speaking.
You know, I had one more class, and you know, I could actually graduate. And at the time, like I said, I wasn't really thinking about it. I wasn't thinking like, oh yeah, you know, I'm a graduate, so I can transfer. I just really wanted to graduate so I could BS like my last year. And I didn't have to do any like real schoolwork. It was just like, okay, you know, I really focus on basketball and then, you know, going at it hard. And then once everything kind of like happened, you know, it was a tough season and so on and so forth. After the season, it was like, okay, you know, something to think about. And you hear, you always hear things.
Yes, like, we did.
You hear things in the media, you hear things, so on and so forth. And you're like, okay, that would be a good option. That would be a nice option. Like if that actually comes to life, you know. That would be an option to explore.
And so then, wait, are you saying that you got the idea to transfer to UConn from things that you read the media talking about?
Yeah.
Did we incept this into him? Did I send him to UConn? Is that what happened?
Were you listening to this podcast?
Like, of course, you know, like during the year, it was like, I would see, like, oh, like, you know, I would, like, UConn fans would comment on some of my stuff. And I was like, you know, like, oh, okay. All right. And then, of course, you know, after the season, it was like a media guy asked me, like, oh, will you be back to Seton Hall? I was like, yeah, of course, you know, I'll be back. You know, I'm not really thinking about that. Then, like, the next day, like, I saw, like, you know, my dad was, like, you know, he was on, he likes to read stuff and whatnot, so he was like, oh, you know, there's something about, this, like, you might be going to UConn. And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't heard anything about me going to UConn, so I don't know. you know, we start talking about it, whatever. I'm like, oh, you know, that'll be a nice opportunity. And then, you know, it goes through your head. It's like, oh. Like that whole recruiting process, like when you were, like when I was like, I was a senior in high school. It's like, oh, that would be a, you know, a fun process to go through again. Like, you think that at the time, you're like, oh, you know, that might be a fun process to go through. Like, especially now that I know what the process is like, you know, I've kind of like proven myself a little bit, so on and so forth. And then, and you end up thinking about it, making a decision. And then you realize, like, all right, you know, I actually hated this process. I don't know why. So this whole process.
So you don't want a sixth year.
Like, of course, you know, I'm glad that, you know, I made that decision. But, like, that whole process is, like.
Does it get shady?
Yeah, that process is tough. Because, like, you know, of course. So, like, you have your genuine coaches. You have the ones that's going to tell you, like, okay, you know what? This is what it's going to be. And it ends up being that. But then you have your coaches that's like, okay, you know, you're going to come in, you're going to shoot every shot, and you're going to be our guy. And then you come in, like, and then you realize, you look at their roster, and they have a guy that's averaging 20 points and 10 assists. It's like you know, realistically, like, how realistic is that? Like, so... It's a tough process, kind of like weeding the ones out. And then you also, it's kind of like you come down to the last ones. You come down to the last couple schools and you're like, okay, like, I don't want to make a bad decision. Like, I have to make the right decision. Like, which one am I going to go? And it's stressful. Like, you know, I think when you're coming out of high school, it's more like, I think high school kids now, they enjoy the attention. They love the attention of, like, oh, you know, I'm being recruited. I can make a video and I can put it on. I can put it on Twitter. I put it on Instagram. Get Instagram followers. Blah blah blah. But then, like, when you're an actual transfer, grad transfer, whatever, it's like, all right, like, my future is kind of like on the line. Like, it's like you're thinking kind of like completely differently than a high school guy. So I think that's where the pressure is.
Because you, like, know what you're actually getting into. Like, it's a real choice now.
Exactly. Like, your high school kid is like, okay, you know what? Like, I'm going to go to UConn or I'm going to go to Duke because of the name. And then, like, all my friends are going to be like, oh, you're going to UConn, you're going to Duke. But, you know, like, when you're in college, it's more like, all right, I have to make a decision for myself. I have to make an actual good decision.
Well, I hope that you felt that you did.
Oh, for sure. You know, all the connections UConn has, and, you know, we had a good team. And KO's a good guy, man. I love KO, so yeah. It was a good decision for me.
Now that you're overseas, like, do you get to run into, like, UConn guys anywhere out in the wild? I know you were with Lasan, but or anywhere else like that. What I always found funny is talking to guys when they come back from overseas for a year or two is they usually find another UConn guy, and then the two of them torture every other American guy in the league about how UConn beat their ass for, like, 20 straight years.
This was actually right before Lasan came. We played Jeff Adrian.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, we played Jeff Adrian, and we torched him.
Nice.
Yeah, he played it.
Hang on, let's get Adrian on the pod. Let's double check.
Where he plays it. So we, to be honest, like, torched is maybe a little over.
All right, we'll walk back a little bit.
But, you know,
yeah, I know.
Set lightly aflame.
You know, yeah, you know. Like, he plays at Israel, and he played on the same team as he does this year. And they came, like, we played in the European, in the FIBA Euro Cup, and they came. We played them in Israel, and then they came to us, and we beat them both times. But, you know, of course, he was, like, unstoppable. Like, it was, like,
anytime he got the ball,
it was just, like, all right. You might as well just count the buckets, but eventually, you know, we ended up winning both times. So I think, was that the only time that we played? And actually, you know what? This summer I played against both. So,
oh, nice.
Like, we played like when I was playing in Russia, we played a preseason game against his team, Beşiktaş. However, that
would be. You learned a lot of new names out there, man.
Yeah, in Turkey. Yeah. So we played against his team. We played against them in Slovenia. He has Earl Clark on his team, who's from. He lives pretty much down the street from me in New Jersey.
He's a Scotch Plains guy, right?
Nah, he's a Plainfield guy.
Plainfield, that's right.
Plainfield, Rawway. And
look at the Jersey guy showing off.
Yeah,
that's right. So we ended up beating. It was a preseason game, but we beat them. And I like to keep track of that. So if that ever comes up in a conversation, I should always bring that up.
Yeah, it's weird how that keeps coming up. It's weird how who you beat in exhibition games keeps coming up. So what's your plan? You coming back home for the summer?
I don't know. I'm definitely gonna come back home. I think at this point, my fiance wouldn't allow for me not to come back home. But I'm gonna come back home, and then I may go play somewhere else. Like right now, I'm in the middle of deciding if I want to do a camp. I have the whole flyer and all that stuff made. But then if I play in another country, like last year, I played in Dominican Republic during the summer. Ooh. And it was a old Big East guy was on my team, Francisco Garcia.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So we played together last summer. Me, him, and actually my brother, we played together as well. And so that was Dominican Republic during the summer. Hey, it's good playing, good running, make a little extra money. So I don't know if I'm going to do that again. I may do that or may just try to have my camp because I want to give back and, start something else. So we'll see what happens.
All right, man. Well, I definitely appreciate you staying up in the middle of the night across the world just to talk to us about UConn and crazy basketball coaches from.
No problem at all. Anytime y'all want me to come back on.
Great. That is also not legally binding.
Right. I just I stayed up, watched basketball all night, and then, sleep during the day and go to practice and games. That's it.
You're living your best life.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You got it all That's figured out.
Life. Rolling around Europe playing basketball sounds pretty awesome, frankly.
Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this episode of the Dimebag Podcast. Thanks, Sterling Gibbs, for joining us. And thanks for listening. Until next time, we'll see you later.